session number 23213, rule 1.
Nigel Potts, rule 1. Was there a family tradition of military service that you followed?
Not really. My father was a farmer, but I did have connections with the Navy and the Indian Army. The Indian Army from about 1800 to 1900, and that is my only connection with the services.
When you were growing up, did you decide that you were going to be a soldier, or was there something that happened through circumstances?
Well, I think my father said to me, "Are you going to farm?" And I said, "I think it's far too much like hard work." And I had to do my national service, so I went and volunteered to join the army for 5 years.
Had you done any military training at school?
Yes, I was in the OCTU and took my Certificate A, I think it was called, and that sort of thing. But I didn't really enjoy it.
Why was that?
I think because I was brought up during the war, the sergeant major and the schoolmasters, who were the officers in the corps, were basically out of touch with youngsters of 16 to 17 and a half.
Do you remember what the content of the training was and whether you learned?
Route marching, shooting once a year, minor tactics. And we did a certain amount of work with the Home Guard.
What sort of level of minor tactics were you doing? Was it platoon or
company? I think it was mostly, if I remember rightly, it was section tactics, placing a machine gun on the left or right and doing an assault.
Left flanking or right flanking?
Yeah, that's right.
Was that tactical training useful?
I suppose it was, but I think when I started to do my proper training, I went to 28th Training Battalion, which was a unit in Northern Ireland for potential officers and NCOs, and as against doing 3 or 4 months at a depot, you did 6 months there at 28th Training Battalion.
And what did you do there? What was the syllabus of training at 28th Training?
I think when you added it up, it was to, when you passed out, you were a fully competent member of a rifle platoon, able to use your rifle up and try to be a marksman. You fired all the platoon weapons. And in general, to be, if you like, a good soldier.
Had you done much collective training there?
We did a fair amount. We used to go to Ballykinla to shoot, and we used to do nights out in the various hills and mountains. I thoroughly enjoyed my 6 months there. It was fairly tough. But one felt one was actually learning quite a lot.
What about the discipline? Did you find the discipline difficult to accept when you first arrived?
Not really. Having been at a boarding school, the discipline was much relaxed from what I've been used to.
So joining the army meant you were escaping from hard work and a more severe form of discipline.
That's about it. That's about it.
What about the other recruits in your squad at 28th Training Battalion?
We were a mixed bag. We had, I think, 2 old Etonians. We certainly had a full general's son, who was quite well known during the war, a chap called General Bucknell, who was a son. We had 1 or 2 re-enlistments who'd come in and were potential NCOs who had seen war service. And in fact, we were 50-50 potential officers, potential NCOs.
Was there a serious and visible difference between those who are going to be officers and those who are destined?
No, not at all. None at all. We lived in pretty harsh conditions. They were two-tier beds, and we lived on straw mattresses and straw bolsters for our pillows. And I don't think it was until later that I ever came across sheets in the army.
What was the food like?
Well, it's pretty awful, really. Yes, it was. In fact, some of it was pretty horrendous. I was lucky because I was underweight, although I came from a farm, and I used to get a pint of milk every morning at 10:30.
How did you get selected for this particular battalion?
Recruiting office in Exeter. I went there to join up, signed on, and they told me where I would receive a letter. And I received a letter saying to go to Belfast.
Had you any connections at all with Ireland?
No, I hadn't. But the people on this all the people who went to 28 Training Battalion, if you came from a line below, I think, sort of Yorkshire, Lancashire, went to Northern Ireland, there was another training battalion at Elgin called 29th Training Battalion, and then there was the Guards squad at Pirbright, and the cavalry went to Catterick, I think. I couldn't honestly tell you.
Did everyone who went in on the intake that you joined pass out at the other end?
There was a dropout rate, but rather like the Marines, you only dropped out and people went back squatted if you damaged yourself or something like that, and then were back squatted because you missed so much training.
Matter of injury, then.
Matter of injury, yeah.
Was it physically very strenuous?
Yes, it was. It was. We were kept at it. One seemed to think, the only time one got a rest was Padre's hour when you went to sleep.
When you were doing your PT, do you remember if there was an emphasis upon any particular aspect, such as strength or...
Oh, I think strength and everything else. Yeah, strength. It was like school in a lot of respects. Because most schools, your PT was taken by an ex-SOM major anyway, in those days, you know, during the war.
During the weapon training, what sort of range were you shooting at? What distances?
towards the end, you did the full infantry course. I think we went down and we stayed at Ballykinlough for 4 or 5 days. Firing all weapons, all platoon weapons, including the wretched Piat and that sort of thing.
But with the standard weapon, the rifle, presumably the short magazine, the Enfield.
Yeah.
Would you be firing up 600 yards or
beyond? Well, whatever the course was, I can't honestly remember.
Did you have any idea when you joined the training battalion about what would happen to you when you finished?
Well, I joined up originally. We wore a cross rifles because we were General Service Corps there. But when we walked out, we wore our own flashes. And I had actually joined the Devons. And so I was put into the Devons. Would have gone to the Devons if I'd failed to pass out or be selected to be an officer. Well, I went to Oxford, and I can't remember. Well, Mons was part of it.
Just been
Aldershot. Yeah, and then they said I was to go to the RESC down the road to be an RESC officer.
Would that be Blackdown?
I think it was Blackdown or one of those places. Might have been Borden or something like that, and I didn't want to go to the RESC or the Ordnance, or I didn't want to be an officer in the Corps. That's what it ended up as.
Did you What was the syllabus at the Octu like? How did that compare with what you learned at 28 training pattern?
It's completely different, really. We did the same sort of things, but I'd never done mounting and dismounting on a bicycle before. map reading, just general training. I presume I didn't take too much heed things I should do as an officer. We were taught about welfare matters, etc., and rates of pay, I think. I really can't remember, you know, it's 50 plus years ago. Well, administration, yeah.
Did they raise the tactical training to a higher level at the Octu?
Well, I think it was all at platoon level. Because the platoon being basically the lowest sort of viable formation.
Did you spend a lot of time out?
Yes, we went to battle camp. I think we went to Okehampton, if I remember correctly. And we spent a week or 10 days there.
And what about the disciplinary side? Was discipline at the Octu tighter than it had been at 28?
Well, we were when I was at Mons. I never went on from Mons. RSM Britain was the administrator of justice and discipline. And being rather tall, I was always right marker. And I used to get more, I considered, than my fair share of discipline from him.
It doesn't do to stand out.
Beg your pardon?
Doesn't do to stand out.
No, that's right.
So you're saying you didn't want to go to the RASC or the Ordnance Corps?
No.
And so what happened?
Well, I won't go to the Devons. I was sent up to Redford Barracks. I wanted to transfer to the Gordons.
Why was that?
Well, I thought I rather fancied being a Highlander. You know what the youngsters are like. Anyway, I went up there, and I was there for about 3 weeks, doing really nothing. And I was, and they said, no, you can't transfer. Because you've got no family connection. So I was whizzed off down to Bulford, to the Wessex Brigade Training Centre there. I was there for 2 or 3 months.
What's going on there?
Well, I seem to do sort of things like guard, a vedette duty on Salisbury Plain, general dog's body to everybody and nobody. And then a draft came up and they said, you're going to Austria to join the Hampshires. And I wasn't worried. I thought that'd be rather nice, Hampshire, Austria. But then the draft was cancelled and the next draft came up and there were only 6 of us on it. And we were sent to Singapore.
Join the
Dems.
How did you get out there?
Went out on a troop ship, you know, the old, in a hammock, feeding on your mess deck table, and like a slave galley, really.
Did you know anything about Singapore when you were on your way out there?
No, nothing at all. And we had very little knowledge lecture that we received lectures on very little. Thing was that one read lots of books on the way out to Singapore. That was the be all and end all, and played tombola.
What happened then when you arrived?
When we arrived at the island, we were picked up by a truck from the Devons, and we were taken to Selarang Barracks. Where the first Devons were, who were carrying out general duties on Singapore Island, such as guards, etc. And we were all interviewed by the adjutant, And
were those individual interviews?
Yeah, individual interviews.
And what he asked you or said to you?
Yeah, I know him very well. I still know him. He lives just up the road here, Colonel Bullock. He's a friend of mine. And he said, oh, God, what are we going to do with you? You left Oxford and you've arrived here in Singapore. And I don't know what we're going to do with you. He said, I think we've got a vacancy in the police for a corporal because you're quite large. We'll put you in the regimental police. So this was May 1948. And so I went off to be a police corporal. It's quite interesting.
What were the duties?
Oh, you know, prisoners and marching prisoners around and generally sort of seeing that soldiers went out properly dressed out of the front gate and checking MT vehicles and patrols around the barracks. But well, we had quite a lot of Ceylonese, funnily enough, who'd come from the Ceylonese Pioneer Corps. There'd been a mutiny up at the by the causeway. And we were holding about 20 of them. So that was quite interesting. But then suddenly the emergency started in Malaya. So I was sent straight. They said, oh, well, you can read a map and you can read a compass. Rifle company. And so off I went to a rifle company.
Who'd been in charge of you when you were in the regimental police?
The adjutant and the regimental police sergeant.
Do you think perhaps the agent might have decided to keep you by to keep an eye on you until you've got
settled? Well, I don't know what he thought. I think he thought I was just trouble. I've never discussed it with him. And I mean, I've known Michael ever since. Well, I've known him since 1960, you know, personally as friends. So that's over 40 years.
Did you ever have to use your bulk?
Oh, yeah. Thinking back now, one of our jobs was to patrol the brothel area of Changi, which is always quite amusing. You know, you've got a soldier who would say, you'd catch him with a prostitute, and you say, what are you doing? He'd say, learning Chinese, corporal.
Was it an offence to be called?
Oh, yes, because you were in a... They were all supposed to have VD and that sort of thing, or worse. We used to do that Friday and Saturday nights. And, of course, Changi had to be... there was a curfew after midnight or something like that. And the troops all used to go down there to the RAF Malcolm Club and that sort of thing.
So would you be going out on foot patrol or...
We'd go down in the vehicle and then there would be four of us. I think there were only six in the, or eight in the police. And you go around as a pair.
And you'd be looking.
Looking, and if there was any trouble in a cafe or Chinese appeared and said, those two going up the road haven't paid, you apprehended them. We didn't have much trouble. The average Devonian is entirely different, say, from a Scottish or Irish soldier.
The Devons had a being
relatively docile. Not difficult at all.
And these Ceylonese who you say had been involved in mutiny, did they indicate what the trouble had been about?
I think it was pay and conditions. Pay, conditions, and they didn't like being overseas from Ceylon. I never went into it with them because they, most of them just chattered away in Ceylonese.
Were they any trouble to...
They could be at times, yeah. But we cajoled them along and they were all right with us.
They haven't got agreements against you?
No, it was against the authorities.
What happened to them?
I think they were all... Some of them were court-martialed and the rest were eventually... sent back to Ceylon, as it was then. But we had to hand over the barracks to... I don't know who we handed it over to. And we were, oh, Inner Skillings.
Yes.
They'd come down from Hong Kong. They took over.
What impression did you get of Singapore and its life? And so, young chap out there for the first time.
I think one, the... can we just stop a minute?
Singapore.
Singapore, of course, there's no middle class, white middle class in Singapore. They were either in business or considered themselves always to be slightly above talking to, if you like, squaddies. I don't think there was, we had much to do with local population, European. I did know somebody there, friends of my parents, who was in the tanks, and he had me out to dinner a couple of times. But the troops, I mean, was with local Chinese or Indian girls. But I was interested in athletics and things like that and swimming. So I didn't really socialise an awful lot.
Was there any sense of political tension or
threat? None at all, none at all. I did actually go to court once. I caught a Indian stealing inside the camp. And I had to go to court to say what why I'd arrested him. And sitting in the court, everybody was friendly, and I never heard of anybody being attacked or molested at all by the local population.
You've been a corporal in the regimental police.
Yeah.
And then there was an alarm, and you were transferred to a rifle
company. Yeah. I went to a rifle company as a corporal, as a section commander.
So this would have been your first command?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Tell me about the soldiers in your section.
Well, they were all Devonians. They were all from people from Exeter, Torbay, really from the area I came from, so I had quite a lot in common.
Were they all National Service?
Most of them were National Service. One or two regulars. In fact, my Section 2 IC got an MM after 3 months in Malaya, but not I wasn't there. It was he was ambushed in a truck. But yeah, he was the first MM of the emergency.
How did they receive you as you arrived as the new corporal?
Oh, all right, no problem at all. We had a lot of work to do. We had an area. As a battalion, really, from just north, Liang, north to Sagamet. And we were astride the main road. Kluang was battalion headquarters. So, therefore, we had a heck of an area to patrol and look after, which we didn't do very well at all, because we didn't really know who the enemy were. We had no information. We knew that two or three planters had been killed, but it was like all British wars. It was all going to be over by Christmas.
And you learn as you go along.
And you learn as you go along. The first thing we did was the kit we had was appalling.
What was wrong with it?
Yeah, well, we had ammunition boots for working in the jungle. Most of the soldiers bought things like barter basketball boots and stuff like that. We didn't even have jungle hats to start with. And of course, people couldn't work out why the jungle green rotted out in about a month. And the colour sergeant was all, oh, I can't get any more, that sort of thing.
It would be the your quartermaster.
This is a colour sergeant. Yeah. So we were, if you like, we did go on. And I spoke earlier, before we started this interview, about the food. We went out on patrol for 24 or 48 hours in those days. And we carried the most appalling rations. You know, carrots, tins of carrots with water in them, and peas and... Another awful thing we always had out there, I don't know why, pilchards in tomato sauce. Yeah, we carried a lot of junk food.
A lot of weight too.
Oh, awful. Awful.
What do you remember what you were told when the order came to hand over your barracks to Sarawak and move out?
I cannot remember. I think we moved within 48 hours of being told that we were to go into Johor.
How was this move carried out?
No, trucks. We went in trucks to a location. We were in... Remember, we were on the Johor Labis oil estate, you know, oil nut estate, and we were spread out around that.
Was this spread out as a battalion or spread out?
No, this was a company.
It was a company.
Yeah. And of course, our company commander, I'd never seen him before, and he was only there for a very short time, and then somebody else came. We seemed to have an awful lot of company commanders.
Does this mean then the company was dispersed in platoon?
In platoon areas, yeah.
What was your platoon area like?
It was a couple of old rubber bashers, really, just bashers with. We had, where my platoon was, we had centralised feeding with company headquarters.
Was the platoon up to strength?
As far as I remember, yes, but we never had enough men to do all the duties we were supposed to do.
Who was the platoon commander and what was he like?
I have to be honest about it and say he was useless.
What was it that made him useless?
Well, he didn't know his soldiers and he couldn't read a map. He was aloof. He was a national serviceman. I can even remember his name, but I won't mention it. I thought he was absolutely appalling.
What about the platoon sergeant? Was he okay?
Be honest, I can't even remember who he was. I seem to do all the work, and I'm not bullshitting. Yeah, I think I always seem to do most of the work and the sort of. I was always doing the arms checks, ammunition checks, and that sort of thing. I suppose because my training had put me in that position.
Was there a specific area of platoon responsibility, or was it operating within a company tactical area?
No, we had all sorts of things to do. We had to put soldiers on buses to stop them being attacked. We had to have two men on a truck in case the driver was ambushed. We were ordered out to go to various small patrols through the show the flag, if you like. And
small patrols, what scale would a small patrol be?
Oh, corporal and two or three for 4 or 5 hours, you know. Generally, half of those got lost.
What was the terrain like?
Terrain was not bad because it was plantation. It's only when you got into the jungle. I don't think they ever allowed junior NCOs into the jungle to start with, anyway. It was really keeping the rubber estates from being attacked. That was the main aim.
If you went on one of
Well, depending on the rubber, if it was well looked after rubber, you can do 2 or 3 miles an hour. If it was where they had allowed the undergrowth to grow up, it took much longer. And of course, the maps were not as good as one hoped they might be. And of course, the roads weren't marked and tracks weren't marked. We never went into kampongs, small villages, unless we were a platoon organisation, in case there were terrorists there.
When you were doing these small patrols early on in the rubber, yeah. Did you have any sight or sound of the enemy?
Yeah, well, actually, I went away then after a short time. To ferret force,